Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome back to the No BS Bishop. I'm alive to love. I believe all lesser values devolve into BS, bait and switch, or whatever else you want to call that. I refuse to live my life on a lesser value than love. And so, I invite you come here each week for the No BS Bishop. Let me talk to you about love. Let's explore love. Let's discuss love. Let's unpack the beauty of love. Let's be pilgrims on a journey of love. Let's be mountain climbers seeking to summit this magnificent treasure we call love. We need love like we need oxygen. You know, that's why we close every No BS Bishop with the exercise of breathing. We need love like we need oxygen. Without love, we are suffocating emotionally, psychologically. We're suffocating by being deprived. I'll get it out of there. Hang in there. My mouth sometimes gets jammed up. We are deprived of healthy relationships. And sometimes the deprivation isn't everybody else's fault. It's our own, because we have simply stopped short somewhere in the journey of love. I know when we love, we risk being crushed. We risk being abused or betrayed, but there's simply no other way to love without that risk, without that factor that we call risk. And so that's why we start here lately. We've begun to start every No BS Bishop Alive to Love broadcast with love's creed. It's something that I've written, something I live by, something I keep in front of me, and I want you to keep it in front of you. All right, I'm going to say it through one time in total, then I'll come back and break it down into phrases that are like vows. Here we go. Love's creed. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. Now let's go through it in phrases at a time to do it like the Apostles' Creed. All right, here we go. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I'm unavailable for anything less than love. Love's creed. I'm not joking. This is life-changing. This is life-altering. This is what could set you on in motion toward living a bigger life. Not necessarily pain-proof, because love will introduce you to the possibility of pain, because there's 7 billion other people on this planet who are each in their own journey of love, or lack of a journey of love. And when you love and meet someone who's love deprived, you're likely to have some kind of collision. I'm sorry, but that's just the reality of it. And yet, the reason it is so vital for us to continue on the journey and the pilgrimage of love is, as I said to start with, we need love like we need oxygen. Because when we live without love, we are risking suffocation on lovelessness and despair. We risk being crushed by the belief that the world is a loveless place. Listen, there's no such thing as a loveless world if you are a lover, if I'm a lover. Once love shows up, the world is suddenly changed. one person, one step, one word, one action at a time. Love is the answer to the human dilemma. That's why every week here, in some form or another, I keep saying, God is love and love is God. He who dwells in God dwells in love. He who dwells in love dwells in God. There is no separation from deity from love. There's no such thing as a person. You don't have to be a scholar, a theological scholar, to be a lover. You can be a child and love. You can be a person at near death to love. You could be a person with no formal education and still be a lover. Love simply requires your availability, putting yourself in proximity to its journey, putting yourself at the risk, and putting yourself at the exciting and fascinating climb. The old saying is, why does the mountaineer climb the mountain? And the answer is, because it's there. Why do we love? Because it's there. We love in the adventurous notion that without it, we simply are not real human beings. Our humanity has been shortchanged. And so, love is not an emotion. I know that. And I regularly maintain vigil on myself because my emotions get wrapped up in love routinely. And that's a part of what happens with love. But it plays a vital part, emotions do, in my love. And love then plays a vital part in my emotions. I've got to continue to have love activated in me, through me, for me, to continue this life journey in some quality way. So today I want to talk a little bit. I don't know if I can do it justice or not, but I'm going to try. I want to talk to you a little bit about the science of love. There's a science to love. In fact, I guess all of my broadcasts here, the No BS Bishop Alive to Love, could be called the study of the science of love. The science of love, I think, it gathers in all the ideas of the human experience. In the human experience, we're all battling some major crisis or minor crisis on any given day. Every day has a crisis involved, and because of the crises, we tend to downplay our interaction with other people. Let me explain that. When we're absorbed in the crisis of, say, paying your bills, you're just trying to make ends meet, making sure the budget stretches month in and month out. When you're involved in that crisis, and it can become very crisis-oriented if you're facing foreclosure or bankruptcy, when you're involved in that crisis, it shortchanges you. It pulls you out of the adventure of love. On the other hand, it can also, if we do what we say in Love's Creed, I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for breathing, eating, sleeping, and regaining energy to cause pain. If we can catch ourselves, if we can sustain some vigilance over our own life, then even in crisis, we can love. But we are each one involved in some crisis, high or low, great or small. And the crisis then defines us outside of or inside of love. I'm inviting you to let crisis create in you a greater love, to make you a better lover, so that when you know you're in a crisis and you've survived a crisis, large or small, and you look at others who are walking in some crisis of their own, well, then you're a better lover. You're a better neighbor. You're a better friend. You're a better spouse. You're a better mom. You're a better dad. You're a better employee. You're a better boss. When you see that all folks are involved in some crisis of life, then you know, all right, I'm going to meet you where I know I've been so that we together can fight forward. I'm very concerned about how selfish we can become when love is not our high priority, when love's creed is not our daily mantra. We don't live our life when we live that kind of selfishness. Because we have to understand the only person responsible for our current mental, emotional, and spiritual health is me. I mean, not me for you, but you for you and me for me. No one determines the quality of our life without our permission. And love sets a boundary, a margin, and a gate and a doorway that establishes a healthy means of interacting with people through love, through sensitivity, through being kind and gentle, and managing your manners. Watch your manners, Mama used to say. Watch your manners. Where are your manners, boy or girl? Nobody gets to have a say about our quality of life without our permission. When we marginalize controllers and celebrate the contributors, we're in a better place to love. That's the science of love. That's what I'm talking about. Getting into the science of being able to manage our life well toward a better purpose of love. I've come across a statement or two, and I've tried to put it in my own words. And here's first of all, I'll give you a quote, and then I'll give you my own words about it. Francis Frangipane once said, he was an author and a preacher teacher many years ago. He said, "It's a great deception to become so consumed with the deteriorating condition of our world that we fail to see the deteriorating condition of our own soul." Oh, that is a mouthful. We become obsessed with how wrong others are, how bad the bad people are, how evil the evil folks are. And in so doing, it becomes an addiction. It becomes an obsession. Our vision, our visual is all wrapped up in how bad the world's getting. And don't make any mistake about it. I can see how bad the world can be. I can see it. What I choose, though, and I have to do a daily discipline in this, what I choose is to keep myself focused on me to the best of my ability, to the highest of my own conscious working, to stay on me more than I stay on others. Now that was the quote from Francis Frangipane, but in my own quote, here's what I've written to myself, and I just want to read it to you and go back through it in the science of love. One of the greatest temptations of good people, and of course everybody out there probably thinks of yourself as the good people, right? All right, no, okay. Love will help you expand your horizon about that. But anyway, one of the great temptations of good people is taking the moral inventory of all others while neglecting our own fearless and searching moral inventory. That comes from the 12 steps of AA. Do a fearless and searching moral inventory. Managing well how we have stumbled, how we do have regrets, and how those regrets can lead us to making amends. We do have failures in our life, and those failures are beckoning us towards something far more with more reparations for the world around us rather than retribution to the world around us. One of the great temptations of good people is taking the moral inventory of others while neglecting our own fearless and searching moral inventory. You know, when we are determining the weaknesses of others, it's so much easier than owning our own failures, right? Looking at other people and taking their inventory, it's so much easier than taking a good look in that the lady or the man in the mirror. And here's what happens, though. It keeps us stuck in an unexamined life. Now, I want to be quick to say on that if you live your life in constant introspection, you're not loving. That's not loving yourself, and it's certainly not loving your neighbor. But I do believe that the well-examined, the examined life on a healthy basis is the life that is well worth living. Somebody else has said that. I'm kind of rearranging the quote. When we have given ourselves the opportunity to manage a well-constructed examination of ourself, well, we're in a place where we're going to continue to grow and be healthier. When we, in our fearless and searching moral inventory, when we've discovered that our love has been anemic, when our love has been off and on again, well, it's clear, and I'm looking here at the science of love, you know, there's cause and effect here. You know, there's this power of immovable object that meets the irresistible force. And that's kind of what the science of love has to do with here. I hope you understand that. When we meet somebody with our own lovelessness and we get lovelessness in return, well, now we've got to talk not just about how we feel unloved by somebody, but we've got to talk about how we have not been loving. So that's what a fearless, searching moral inventory will do. It maintains a constant vigil without being obsessed with an introspection, but it maintains a constant vigil for healthy understanding, a healthy view of my participation in the cycle of dysfunction around me. If I'm looking at dysfunction in somebody else, okay, that's reasonable to see. I've sure lived that in my own life with growing up in a home that was badly, horribly affected by drugs and alcohol. I can tell you that when you grow up in dysfunction, when you are soaked in dysfunction, whoo-wee, it just creates all kinds of levels of need for a healthy, fearless moral inventory. And in so doing, though, you've got to take your own moral inventory, even if others are causing pain. It maintains in you the search. Remember what Francis Frangipane says, is that we simply are not able, when we live like that. The great deception, he said, is to become so consumed with the deteriorating condition of the world that we fail to see the deteriorating condition of our own soul. So when others are, as for example, when we're routinely faced with dysfunction, we're routinely seeing someone behaving badly, we become obsessed with it. We get on our guard, and naturally so. But then inside of us, there's a whole other world going on that deserves our full attention. I've shared this story with you before, but it illustrates my point. And the story is the night that Osama bin Laden, when he was assassinated by the United States military, when brave Navy SEALs and special forces found that criminal and they assassinated him. You know, I heard that news on the television that night, and something in me celebrated right away. I jumped up, fist pumped the air, and I said, "Yes!" And immediately my conscience struck me. Immediately in my own soul, I became aware, oh, I'm celebrating the death of a human being, even a criminal, but I'm celebrating the death of a human being. And I knew that something in my soul needed to grow. Something in my soul was shrunken because I was more obsessed with justice than I was with my own call to love. So I spent many days combing through just that simple line in my own life of how did I come to the place where I could celebrate somebody's murder, somebody's assassination, somebody's death, whoever they were, how did I get there? And it did me some good. You know, it did me an awful lot of good. I'm not saying that Osama bin Laden did not put himself in a place where the world would hunt him down. But what I am saying is when I see that problem as the greater challenge in my life than my own internal assassins, my own internal bad guy, my own internal criminal, my own internal liar, my own internal selfish little brat. If I stay focused on the Osama bin Ladens of this world, I will reject and neglect to look inside of me and find a terrorist that lives inside of me that needs to be brought to justice inside of me. Hear that carefully. I when I demand justice, that just cries out inside of me, there's something in Randy that's living selfish. There's something in Randy that's living at a point where, oh, Randy just wants revenge. Randy's just looking for his pound of flesh somehow. Well, here's the problem. If all I am seeing in this world is the next pound of flesh, I better remember I'm a big bag of flesh. And somebody may be looking for my pound of flesh. And it may hurt me that I have not been paying attention through a searching and fearless moral inventory. I haven't been paying attention how I am somebody just like that. I know it's a challenge. I know this whole journey of love, this whole pilgrimage of love, it is a daily, it's a daily project, isn't it? But it's worth the journey. What do you want to do at the end of your life? How do you want to be remembered? Was she a lover? Was he a lover? Were they capable of overcoming their pains long enough to love others as God has loved them? Are they living this life without a need to get revenge, or are they living this life at this sad and unconscionable demand to get everybody else fixed without looking daily in the mirror to see to it that I'm being fixed, made well? My wife and I have a phrase, and that is, may I be healed from the top of my head to my soul to the tips of my toes, which is to say, may I be saturated from the hair follicles to toenails and everything in between with the power of a capital L, love. May love purge all of me to make me the greater human in this fractious crucifying world that we live in. I'm recording this during Holy Week. I'm very, very, very conscious, and my mind is focused on living through and seeing the crucifixion, the criminal trial of Jesus, and seeing it through my eyes today at 69 years of age, and knowing that I need to learn something every time we come through Lent and now Passion Week and ultimately Easter. I got to learn something. I want to grow. I want to get better, not bitter. So we close every No BS Bishop with two exercises. Remember I said, living without love is like living without oxygen. You get suffocated. There's a suffocation going on. And to that end, we should practice our breathing. That's one reason I practice breathing. Another reason is that I believe that Jesus set the pattern, set the tone when he said that the Holy Spirit, that part of the triune God, is like the wind. He's like the air. He's like the breeze. You don't know where the Holy Spirit came from, and you don't know where the Holy Spirit's going. Like the breeze on your face, or even a wild wind, that's the Holy Spirit. So when we breathe, we're practicing a spiritual beauty, and that is to breathe in love, to exhale gratitude. So on the count of three, and I want to take this as slowly as I dare with the time left for me, make sure, first of all, you're sitting up straight, your feet are flat on the floor. On the count of three, take a good, healthy breath. Slow yourself down. Slow your thoughts down. Slow your meditation down to love and gratitude, all right? Get that breath as deep into your lungs as you know how. Hold it in the basement of your lungs, pressing against your diaphragm, and then exhale, all right? On the count of three. One, two, three. Now breathe in love. Hold it, and exhale, gratitude. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, that felt so good, we should do it again. One, two, three, breathe in. Hold it nice and deep, and exhale, gratitude. That simple exercise, done daily. I've said here many times, do it for 5 minutes in a day. But if you can't, at least do it two or three times sporadically through the day. Give yourself the chance to breathe, remembering that love is like oxygen. And without love, we are suffocating. We are craving that oxygen, the nourishment for our mind, body, soul. And our psychology gets healthier when love is present. That's why I said today, this is about the science of love. I've been a little bit, all over the map with this, but that's okay. That's where I get some of my best thoughts, is when I can travel all over the map. Another exercise we do, and I want to give a teeny bit more explanation of this, and that is that I want you to learn how to slow the three charmed, magical words of the human language down. Slow them down. Saying, I love you, deserves your full attention, deserves the opportunity to be packed full of meaning. It is all too common for us to say, love ya, as one word, L-U-V-Y-A, love ya. And I've done it. I'm not saying I haven't. But when I do it, it strikes me as, oh, I did it again. I got to do a fearless and searching moral inventory and keep me on track to slowing it down and saying with intention and involvement, I love you. I want to catch somebody's eye as often as I can. Doesn't mean everybody, because some people just may not be ready for that kind of intimacy or that kind of closeness. But there are many who are more than ready all around us that are starving for somebody to say, I love you. So on this beautiful today, on the broadcast of this is Easter weekend. On this beautiful weekend, be sure that you give somebody your eye contact, your heart, your time, and say, I love you. Knowing that through those three words, you could change the world. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for pain. I'm alive with plans and dreams and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I'm unavailable for anything less. Thank you for being here again today for this episode of the No BS Bishop. I'm alive to love. All lesser values devolve into BS, and I don't want to live in those dark regions of the world. My fearless and searching moral inventory calls me to live a better, bigger life. I invite you to join me, not only in that adventure, but here every weekend on Saturdays and Sundays for a No BS Bishop episode. Now go out there and do something beautiful, because ugly, oh, baby, ugly has been done to death. Happy trails.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.